With an entrepreneurial spirit that was evident from a young age, our guest is a seasoned founder who took the business world by storm when he launched his first venture at the tender age of 17. And his tenacity and vision led him to achieve his first million in sales by the age of 22. You are going to love learning about his current startup, an eco-conscious micro-mobility company focused on safety and equity. Stay tuned for another delicious and edutaining conversation on the Startup Life Show. Let's glow, everyone. Woohoo! Hello and welcome to the Startup Life Live Show. I'm your host, Andy Lyons, four times founder and startup champion to founders around the world. And after raising four businesses of my own, oh, let me tell you, I have a pretty darn good idea of what you're going through every single day. And wow, am I in awe and wonder of you, your own resilience and courage and tenacity and persistence to bring your dream to life, to solve those problems with your startup. Seriously, where's my clapper? I am applauding and cheering wildly for you from Boston. And I'm so grateful that you carved out time to tune in to the Startup Life Show, because you know, nothing prepares you for this founder journey, right? So when you sit down in that seat, you got to grow. Every single day you're learning, whether it's a quick acronym, what's LTV, CAC ratio, to figuring out how to get money, get capital, get customers, everything that you're doing. So when you're tuning in to the Startup Life Show, you're upping your founder game. And as you do better, that's right, your startup will do better. To receive an alert whenever I post a new show, hop on over to the Startup Life Meetup group. This way, you'll get all the links to either watch the video here on YouTube or listen to it via your favorite podcast platform. And if you are watching on YouTube, hey, thank you for your subscribe love. I'm just going to say thank you. And also for your like on the video. It really helps me reach more folks. And those of you who are tuning in to the podcast, oh my gosh, if you would be so inclined, I'd be grateful for you to subscribe and rate the show and a comment. What? That would just really blow my mind. So thank you very, very much for your generous support. And then I'd like to just share a little here for those of you who are female owned and are a B2B business. Please consider getting certified by the gold standard of women owned businesses, certifications, trying to get that word out. Get WeBank certified. That's the Women's Business Enterprise National Council. And if you've thought about this, if you've gone on there and said, I cannot even think about those documents, all those pesky questions, I have no idea what I would be doing, you reach out to me, send me an email, andy@andylyons.com, and say WeBank in the subject line and help in the content, and I can help you. I've helped a lot of women, dozens of women, cross the finish line and get this certification. And the reason you want this is because companies, big, you know, Fortune 1000, Fortune 500 companies want to hire you. They want to give you money. Government contracts want to hire you and give you money for the work that you provide and the services that you provide. But they need to know that you're bona fide as a woman-owned business. So right there, WeBank certification is the way to glow. All right, time to introduce this phenomenal guest that we have on the show today, the one, the only, Emil Nani. And I got to tell you, his background, oh my gosh, I said earlier, right? Seasoned founder who had his first business at the age of 17. He is a seasoned and serial entrepreneur, and today, the founder of Boaz Bikes, where he took a vision of a safer vehicle while supporting underserved communities and created a groundbreaking electric scooter and e-bike, MaaS. So it's like SaaS, but mass. We're going to get all into that. A mass platform that has transformed the landscape of urban transportation by solving first and last mile transportation problems for cities across the globe. This is a phenomenal business. Wait till you meet this founder. Welcome to the show, Emil Nani.
Hello, Thank you for having me. I love it.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited to have you. You know, I saw you. I found you online. I don't know. I got something, maybe a newsletter, something about you. And I said, oh my gosh, A, would you please connect with me on LinkedIn? And then B, would you please come on the show? And you said, yes. Thank you, Emil.
Thank you. I love it. So glad to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here. And where are you sitting now? Where are you geographically located?
Right now, I am in Detroit. I'm in our Detroit warehouse. I live in Texas.
Okay. And folks, on the podcast, there's this wonderful, I mean, it just looks warehouse. You see this big, wonderful logo of Boaz Bikes behind Emil. It's so friggin' cool. I'm just so excited to learn all about you. But can we just step back a little and go back to what were you thinking about launching your first venture at the age of 17? My gosh, we're just trying to get people I know at that age as a mom, but also as my own experience, you're just trying to date and you know, get into college or go into your next gig after high school. What called you to launch your first business and what was it?
So, you know, I kind of had a cheat sheet because my mom is an entrepreneur and she had a clothing shop. So, she didn't have any employees. Her kids were her employees, but I mean, so we're talking a young age running her clothing store. But my first venture was a mechanic shop, and
I love this.
I just knew I had to be in business for myself, watching Mama do it.
Oh my gosh. Well, see, and I love this because folks, we always talk about here in the show, the lived experiences that prepare us along the way to do what we're being called to do. So you had a mechanic shop, like, was it like a Jiffy Lube type of shop, or was it like, we'll tune you up or we'll change your top, you know, what kind of mechanic shop, or was it for bikes?
It should have been, right? So we did brakes, we did training, transmissions, engine swaps, and the setup was we actually started it connected to the church. So my pastor at the time helped me get it all set up and ran all the church member cars. It was lovely.
Oh my gosh, Emil, this is so exciting because you had a built-in community that wanted to support you, right? And help you get off the ground and add wind to your sails, which is so important. And so, you know, what happened next? Because I hopped on your LinkedIn, and on LinkedIn, it talked about a singing career. You know, you were an artistpreneur. So I'm wondering, how do you go from mechanic, right?
Yeah.
To an artistpreneur. Like, talk a little bit about that transition.
Yeah. So I was always doing music since I was like 5 years old. So like, and I was a hip hop artist. So it was always in me. And my career just started blowing up with being on social media. And, you know, it's where my heart was, making music. And I'm a believer. So I was doing something called Christian hip hop at the time, which was extremely new. Like, you know, I mean, it's been around, but nobody knew about it. And the church is where my heart was. And I was like, okay, I have a gift. How can I use my gift for the church? And that's what took me into the music realm.
Excellent. So are you in the part of the world where the churches are big?
Oh, yeah.
Like a big popular, you know, I'm here in New England. So our churches tend to have a much smaller attendance, you know, and community. But I've seen, you know, what can happen in Texas if that's where you were raised. Yes.
No. Raised, born and raised in North Carolina.
In North Carolina. Okay.
Bible Belt.
Okay. So that you had, you know, you had big churches there. Yeah. Like how big was the typical community?
So my church was fairly small. It was about 400 people.
That's like what we have here.
That I was performing in, we're talking, you know, thousands of people attending the churches.
Excellent. Oh, I love that. And so how long did you have your singing career, your artistpreneur life?
So I was doing it full time for about 4 years. where, you know, this is what I was living off a little over 3 years. This is what I was living off of, going around performing at different venues and different festivals. And yeah.
And did you still have your mechanic business while you were doing that?
Oh, no. So I really didn't like the mechanic work. So I didn't like getting my nails dirty. But my pastor that got me involved, he gave me some advice. And he said, if you learn how to work with your hands, then you'll never have to find work. So he got me on that path. And yeah,
I see. Because I'm just curious, you know, it said in the notes here in your bio that you earned more than $1 million at a young age. Like, what was that like to earn that kind of money?
So the music, right? The music was great, but I was only getting like $500 a show. But I was doing something that I love. I was happy.
Yeah.
But while I was performing, I had merchandise tables. And at the merchandise tables, I was doing $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 on the table. So, and then, you know, my mom had a clothing store. So it was all looped in. And I was like, well, I'm making so much money selling product. Why am I, you know? So that's what kind of transitioned me into the retail space. And I joined a bigger church, and then I started opening up stores and malls across the East Coast. And
no kidding.
I had a blast.
Oh, man, you're a merch man. You know, the merch person at the concerts, right? You turned that into a full-time business. And so tell us the name of your clothing brand and store, and what was that like?
So the name was called Christ Light, which simply just meant, you know, living life, trying to be more like Christ. And so I had five stores in North Carolina. I had a franchise in Florida and another franchise up north. And it was amazing. You're talking about at a young age, making $1 million, you know, in your early 20s, and sales was mind blowing and nothing that I've seen before.
Wow. I mean, and how was your mom with all of this? Because she had had her clothing store for years, and then her son takes off. She's like, say what? I didn't have revenue like that.
She has stopped working her clothing store, but she is like my biggest supporter. So
shout out to mom. Thank you. For not only raising such a wonderful man, but also inspiring him to tap into his full expression through entrepreneurship. Oh, Emil, that is so wonderful. And so as you moved along, you know, what were some of the things that you were learning at such a young age about entrepreneurship?
So, I mean, now I'm looking back and I realize, well, man, I didn't know anything, but I was learning so much that, you know, making this money, and even though on the outside it looked great, and I mean around the cities and the, you know, they were all loved me and the festivals and whatnot, on the inside it's like, it's not as rosy as everybody thinks it is. So, you know, you making, you know, $80,000 a month coming in, and you see it and you're like, oh wow, this is great, and you're spending 50, 60, 70,000, you know, I'm like, oh man.
Right. And that's when you got the hard lesson about margins.
Yeah.
Oh, how many founders listening can go amen to that, seriously? Because, you know, you get that revenue coming in, you're like, yes. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I brought in 80K, but 82 went out. So wait, what's wrong with that picture? I can't meet payroll. You know, and these are why we love sharing the stories, the true stories, the unglorified stories of entrepreneurship, folks. Because you can't be in it for just the money. You've got to be in it because you're passionate about the business that you're building, the problem that you're solving, the customers that you're serving. And that's clearly what you were doing. But you didn't get discouraged by this. You know, you went, okay, that was a great experience. And so what, tell everybody what came next after your wonderful Christ clothing business.
So my retail business, I was actually in malls, like, you know, physical malls, and they high over the rent is like $10,000 a month. And so I seen some of the malls starting to go down. So, you know, right now it's like malls are like vacant, but I seen it going down. So I knew it was time for me to make a shift. And my wife ended up getting sick. And she's from Texas, so she needed to be back home. So I closed everything down in North Carolina. I had a little warehouse where we produce most of the material. Sold everything, took a little bit of the cash I had. We went to Texas, and while I was you know making that transition, I was thinking about this new company called Aaron Driver.
And as one does when they're an entrepreneur, just saying, right? You always have something in the queue.
Always. And I was on fire for it. Like in my head, Aaron Driver was going to change the world. So, you know, this is before apps like Favor, TaskRabbit, or Uber Eats got real big. Yeah. So I was like, one app, monthly subscription, $50 a month, get errands for anything. You can get your food delivery, you can get rides, you can get your grass cut. One app that does all of your errands to make your life easy. I was on fire with it. I was so sure it was it.
And then...
Oh man. So we moved to Texas. I built the app and I ended up launching it in Dallas. And this is when I got exposed to the VC world. Cause before I didn't know about VC money. I just thought you had to, you know, take sales and reinvest that, and that's how you grow your company. So I was exposed to the VC world and I was like, you mean to tell me that you guys will invest into my startup with nothing, no money, no traction? You will invest into my idea to push me to the next level? I was blown away by the VC space, and I got to studying, I got to pitching, I got involved in the little ecosystem in Dallas. But man, it was hard. It was tough. It was tough to raise money. It was tough to get meetings. And the little money I had, I came in for about $250,000. And the little money I had was burning. And the advice that they were getting, you know, it was mentors. They said, hey, build a team. So I got some very expensive people, brought them on board. I'm paying them a salary. I'm not making any money. I had 250 drivers. So errand workers, but it was a marketplace. So I'm the middleman. So the people that need the errands, they pay me the marketplace, and then I pay the driver. So I'm just taking a small little cut of it. So I'm not making any money. I'm losing money just to keep it afloat. And I could not get any VC money at all, not $1. And it was like, I built it.
And this is the problem, right? You know, this is what many, many of us, women, people of color, disabled, LGBTQ plus community members are faced, which is with conscious or unconscious bias. You know, you have these funds who want to go with what they consider a sure bet, and it tends to be unconscious or conscious, a white male. And so those in the numbers, they just keep getting worse. I mean, the data is out there. So, of course, no surprise to those of us who have been, you know, out in the world for years with the VCs going, oh, eye roll. And so, but at the same time, you know, you studied it and I'm sure you were like, what's wrong with this picture? Because I just saw a white guy over here get, you know, $5 million for what he had on the back of a napkin.
Yeah.
But, you know, this... But folks, you have to understand, you know, we're talking centuries of indoctrination, you know, from Eastern European white folks. I mean, here we are in America, right? The bias is there, and it's called trust. And if you dive deep into the psychology, you find that there is a lack of trust for women and for people of color who are doing anything, practically, unless you're a famous artist or actor or something. and it's intrinsic. And I personally believe that unless those LPs that are funding the VC fund, and you might relate to this, Emil, unless they say, okay, 50% of this money we're putting into your fund has to go to, now I'm not talking conversations, people, it has to actually be invested in women, female, people of color businesses. What are your thoughts about that, Emil?
Oh man, I'm hoping and praying I get to see those days. But I think if something like that were to happen, we would see an amazing change. And you know what? You know, I know that they say like you know, when the VCs invest, they only need like 10% of their investment to return, and the rest is going to fail. And in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, you only want 10% of the company to succeed. It may mean maybe you should change the way you're investing. So who knows if they open it up and don't just, you know, invest and back that one avenue, open it up, they may have a higher success rate because it's great companies out here being built.
Oh my gosh, tremendous. And the numbers are there. Better revenue, better profitability. I mean, the data supports doing this. That's why I keep going to the unconscious or conscious bias that's there around trust and, you know, what the other bigger funds are doing. And just something that happens when, and I'm even concerned about those women-led VC funds and those Black-led VC funds. How are they making those decisions? And are they big enough? Because yes, it's great to get 25K or 50K into your business. I'm not poo-pooing that. But to make the change, I'm thinking, Emil, it has to be folks who are willing to put 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, right? Into a company to give it the traction and the runway it needs to really soar and explode. So what happened? Let's wrap up this story. First, I have to find out what happened to Aaron, but I have to see if your wife is okay too.
She is most definitely great. She is perfect now.
Yay.
She's here with me in Detroit.
Yay. Oh, good. Because I know someone would be like, Andy, why aren't you asking that question? So I had to make sure the wonderful darling wife is doing well. Hooray. And then so Aaron, and I just love these stories, Emil, because as a four times founder, you know, I've got some great stories too. It's just part of this amazing journey that we're on. And you learn so much, and it's not all roses, right? It's a lot of growth.
you gotta have the skin and heart for sure.
Oh my gosh. So what happened to Aaron? What was the last name of
Aaron Driver?
Aaron Driver. Great Aaron name. Driver.
So I know, right? that's what I said. And we already had great traction. So I ended up getting Aaron Driver to about 10,000 and monthly recurring revenue. And you know, back to that, you know, people raising off of a napkin, and I'm like, okay, I have drivers, I have revenue. You know, it's obviously a market for it. And this was before Uber Eats blew up. So, you know, I'm like, okay, but I still couldn't get any funding. And I was at that point. So I ran out of my own cash. So I took it from Dallas. Dallas was just too big. I was competing with Uber and Lyft. Most of our errands were rides and food delivery. So I took it to a small city and I started running it in the small city. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to take over these markets in a small city, grow, expand, and then I'll sell the company to Uber. So that was my plan.
I love that plan.
it was my plan, but I wasn't making any real money, but I was able to get to a break-even point where I wasn't losing money, but I needed money to scale, and I couldn't get any money to scale. So for me, that turning point was I ran into Boaz. So Boaz, when I left Aaron Driver to start Boaz, and Boaz was like the golden child. So I ended up closing Aaron Driver down.
All right. So we have to find out. There you were working on thinking, okay, I'm going to build this up, get the traction. I'm going to sell this baby. errand driver to Uber. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I've done all the hard work. I'm completely a traction in this community. It'll just open the doors and they can take it to the next level. How did Boaz come? Like, I'm thinking of that meme, you know, where the guy's walking with the woman and all of a sudden another woman walks by and he's looking over his shoulder. It's like, that's Boaz Bikes for you. How did Boaz Bikes come up to be?
All right. So crazy story. So 2017, there were a whole bunch of bicycles on the road back in 2017. And I reached out to my sister, who is like my second biggest supporter and help my go-to to strategize. So I reached out to her and I said, hey, I see the next phase, and the next phase is scooters. So this is early 2017. I write up a plan. It'll take us, you know, couple dollars to get it started, but everybody's on bicycles right now. We can come out with scooters and use the same share model. And, you know, she was like, you know, we focus on errand driver. Errand driver has all our money. Let's just stay laser focused. 2018 come around and Bird and Lime come on the scene early 2018 with scooters. And I'm like, that's my idea. What is going on? And they did exactly what I thought they were going to do, put the bicycles out of business. And so mid-2018, I'm like, okay, I'm running errand driver. I'm in the city. I see a group of kids, they're riding scooters and they fall off the scooter and it was bad. The ambulance had to come.
No.
And I recorded it. And it was, that was for me, that aha moment, you know, just seeing that kid, college kid, and his life being changed forever. He, you know, he got to get rushed to the hospital. He's never going to ride a scooter again. He could be traumatized. And I was like, you know what? I can build something safer than what Bird and Lime has. And I got online and I saw articles, and they were only in 20 cities at the time. So I saw articles popping up and people were getting hurt in all of these cities that they were in. And I was like, oh, safety is going to be a big problem. And I was like, okay, you know what? Let me take the money that I have. Let me build the prototype. Let me build the app. This is going to be the company that takes us to the end of the tunnel.
Into the promised land. Hey, yes. You know what, Neil? What I'm really feeling too is you found your differentiator, right?
Yes.
So you said, okay, business model proven by this company. Great, but there, you know, lots of people getting hurt. Here's how I'm going to come in and I'm going to really talk about safety, because look, scooters are so much fun. And folks, I was just in Washington, D.C. all last week. And I thought about the scooters. My husband's like, let's get on those scooters. But, you know, we're over 60 and I'm thinking balance, even though we walked 40 miles everywhere. But everybody was zooming along those scooters and having a blast. Safety was a real issue for me, Emil. So two questions.
I'm glad you didn't get on one of those scooters in Washington, D.C.
So I'm going to want to find out what makes Boaz Bike safe. And folks, yeah, we're having this delicious conversation with Emil Nani, and he's the founder and CEO of Boaz Bikes. And those of you who are tuning in to the video portion, I'm putting up some great images here of very happy people on their Boaz bikes, and they're beautiful. They're blue. They've got great tires. We're going to get all the scoop here. Look at this. One is with everybody's got a basketball on their scooter. That. And folks, we're going to talk a little bit about crowdfunding, equity crowdfunding, but in this image here and in the show notes, you will see the ePearl link for joining Boaz Bikes, becoming an owner, right? That's what we love to do. We love to go through equity crowdfunding so we can be an owner in a business like Boaz Bikes. They have an investor wait list. They're going to be opening up for another round that will be raising. You do not want to miss this. I'm just saying, you can spend $100-$200 going out to dinner, or you can put it into a company that's run by a phenomenal founder like Emil that is going to change lives. So there's my pitch. Let's talk about what makes your bike safer.
Sweet. I love it. Boaz is most definitely the safest operator out there. We've had over 250,000 rides with zero reported accidents. So for us, for me, it was just like, okay, a seated scooter is going to be way better than a stand-up scooter. That was during that 2018 aha moment for me. So just having a lower center of gravity, if something were to happen, God forbid, you know, you're lower to the ground, you can easily maneuver, get off of the scooter. That's the one of the main reasons why you wouldn't get hurt. Coupled with, we were the first ones to introduce side mirrors and turn signals. We put bigger tires on our vehicles. We put a wider foot deck so you don't have to ride with one foot in front of the other, one foot behind you. You don't have to do any of that crazy stuff that you have to do with a stand-up scooter. So allowing us to add these changes, we put the basket so you don't have to ride with one hand and hold your bag with another hand. So we made it extremely simple for you to just ride. If something were to happen, our vehicle is going up the curve. You're not going over the handlebars like our competitors. It's extremely safe compared to them.
Oh, it's not just safe. It's brilliant. You've got a seat.
Yeah.
You have so much more control with the seat because, you know, the bikes are going by, but everybody's pedaling and they're kind of wobbly. And I noticed that, and they're on the sidewalk, you know, the scooter with the side mirrors, with the baskets to hold things. It's ideal, especially for a town like Washington, D.C., where we're all going from one museum to another, right?
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, how did you come up with the name Boaz?
So, Boaz, you know, we had, at the time, Bird, Lime, you had Uber, Lyft, all of these four-letter words. And I'm like, okay, I need a four-letter word. What would be my four-letter word? And I couldn't figure out anything, but, you know, me being a believer, Boaz is a biblical character, and he was somebody that was wealthy, had great character, strong, very, very respected, and I thought, this is everything a company should be. So I went with Boaz.
I love that. I'm always happy to hear this too, because when you name your company, everyone, it's just so important that it resonate with you, because you are going to be using it to promote your business. So you better love that name, right, Emil?
I know, that's right.
Oh my gosh. So this is a very capital intensive business. Yeah, I'm popping up the pictures all the time, folks. So you can see, I mean, this is, you've got to be able to purchase these. Did you design these yourself? Did you find them made this way? Where are they made? Tell us everything.
Yeah, so I most definitely designed it. I guess that's great about this whole entrepreneurial life, is that you have so many different connections. So back in my retail days, my connections overseas in China, where I was getting a lot of our apparel made at. And so they helped me. They connected me with a factory. I told them my idea. They helped me bring it to life. And this is 2018. So, and I bootstrapped it. So, you know, I built a prototype and we ran with it.
Emil, I am just like seriously in awe and wonder. That's phenomenal. And again, if you're in a business right now, founders, and it's not going well, look what you learn along the way that can go to the next business you're going to have, right? Connections in China or overseas for these kind of inventory parts. So how many bikes did you get in your first order? And were they good the first time you had your order placed and arrived?
That's a great question. So, man, I love to shoot for the moon. So I was so sure I was going to raise the capital, right? Because it's a no-brainer, right? Like, why wouldn't you invest into this? And then Bird and Lime, they're raising hundreds of millions. So this is 2019. So I do a family and friends round, get a couple dollars, and I put the down payment on 500 vehicles with the mind that I'm going to raise the rest to be able to pay it up. Oh,
right.
My goodness. I could not raise the money. Oh, so my first batch was just 100 vehicles out of the 500. I was able to pay off the first 100 to get those shipped to me.
Oh my gosh, Emil, seriously, this is the challenge that you and so many people are facing, how to get funded. And also, you know, having to make decisions based on the lack of funding. I mean, you could have just hit the ground running literally and scaled immediately. But no. So how, and folks, the reason I always ask, how was that first shipment, is because it's usually a first time you're working with the manufacturer and doesn't always go well. As we know from Billy, who we had on the show, Billy Footwear, you know, 85% of his first order of 4,000 pair of sneakers had to be tossed. So, you know, that those are the challenges that can happen. And I always want you to be thinking about, you know, proactively mitigating risks and really having an understanding. So what is the business model? Because again, I'm coming right off of my trip in DC and I would just see a scooter on its side hanging out somewhere. I'm like, okay, so they pick up the bike. How do you get paid? How does the app work? Tell us all about that. And also when I was introducing you, we talked about MASS, not SASS, MASS. What is that?
All right. Awesome. So the main business model is the per minute rental. So we deploy scooters around the city in strategic areas, high foot traffic areas, underserved communities, making sure people get from point A to point B. They download our mobile app, they put in their credit card, or they use Apple Pay or Google Pay, and they add money to a digital wallet, and they're able to rent the scooter by the minute. On average, it's 39 cents a minute, but when we started off in 2019, it was 15 cents a minute. So the prices are going up. Yesterday, So the main model is the per minute rental. Our additional model is
That's called permit rental.
Per minute rental.
I am. Let me just clean up my ears here. Per minute rental. I want to get that down. So we.
All right. So that's the main model, and it accounts for about 95% of our revenue. Wonderful. Bread and butter. Especially for the tourists, when you come to visit the city, you know, you're jumping on a scooter. If we were in Washington, D.C., you would have rolled a Boaz for sure.
100%. It makes so much more sense. I mean, seriously, I saw guys going by. I mean, their ties were flapping in the wind and they no helmet. I'm like, oh, my God, brain injury coming.
I know. Right. So don't ride.
And so when you have a bike, of course, I want to know, what does break even look like? How many minutes have to be rented before you have a break even on your bike and you're starting to look at profitability?
So the beautiful thing about the scooter industry is that it's a cash cow. Right. And I guess, you know, it's a beautiful and a bad thing because now the cities want their part of it. But for us, one vehicle is paid off in like 7 weeks. So they generate about $350 a month in revenue for one scooter.
Great.
So
that's sweet.
You get a city like Washington, D.C., and you just put out 1,000 scooters and you're good.
And you're good. And that scooter's paying for itself. And how about maintenance? Because, again, a person can take it from point A and point B and just leave it there. They don't have to return it like a city bike. They want you to put it back into that city bike location. These scooters are just left like somebody just dropped and ran. Is that how yours works?
So ours works similar, but just a little better. But in theory, you know, one person ride it, they stop, drop it off somewhere. Somebody else is going to jump on that same scooter. So you would want one scooter to be rented at least twice a day, you know, okay, if the market is that booming. But in theory, somebody else is going to jump on that scooter and ride it somewhere else. And then you come and pick it up when it's dead, you charge it and put it back out. But for us, we were in 2018, we were the first ones to bring out swappable batteries. Now in 2023, everybody's copying. But I mean, this just shows how innovative we are. They were charging their scooters up in houses. They were paying people. Houses were getting caught on fire. They were paying people to pick them up, charge them up in the house. For us, our model that we originated was that go to the scooter, put in a different battery, line it back up, never take the scooter off the street and let somebody else come and rent it. So that was our model back then, and it's slightly changed now.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you have a truck. I mean, you obviously have a GPS tracker, so you know where they all are.
Always.
You probably have a gauge that tells you running low, best get over to that scooter. Because you know, someone doesn't want to be halfway to their destination. And
yeah, you won't want that. But so you can see the battery life before you rent it as a customer. You can see, okay, this scooter has 60%. It's safe.
Just like our earbuds, right? That'll tell you you've got a 35% on battery in your earbud. Okay, so that's cool. I love that. And then what about insurance and, you know, theft and damage? Do you run into any problems with people taking it and using it like they're at a concert and it's a guitar and they're throwing it in the windows of things? Or yeah, I mean, I assume.
So
I go there like the movies, everybody. Very dramatic.
I love it. So insurance is wacky because no insurance carrier is going to cover, you know, if somebody was to steal your car and they'll replace it. No insurance carrier is going to cover our scooters. So our insurance is just to cover the user, something where that happens to the user on the vehicle. So for that, you just have to make sure vehicles don't get stolen. And we operate differently. So the industry average is that they lose about 2-5% worth of their scooters every month. We are at the lowest spectrum of that, mainly because of we use technology to help us out. So we are tracking our vehicles in real time all throughout the day, and we dispatch our team members in real time. So we know when a scooter is being picked up. If somebody pick it up and try to put it in the car, we see the alert. If it's knocked over, you see those cities where scooters are piled up on top of each other. If it's knocked over, we see the alert. We see it in real time. And we go and fix the problem before it gets back to the city. But that's how we cut back on theft and damaged vehicles, by being proactive.
I love it. And of course, and then the branding, right? Because not only is it Boaz Bikes, but this is a Black-owned business, folks. You know, we want to give it the support and love of something that we treasure in our community, and especially in the underserved community. That's, you know, do I have to take a bus or could I get there on a scooter?
Right.
And
that, I believe that helped us out a lot in launching it here in Detroit. Now, and we launched in Detroit. We're also in, you know, cities like Tempe and Scottsdale where the demographics is different, but early on, you know, word of mouth was spreading. Hey, minority-owned company, you know, let's support. Don't mess these scooters up. I'll be out there in the field, and I'll be listening to people, and they'll say, "Yeah, you know, we're not gonna mess these up because these local scooters. Forget the bigger guys." And I'm like, "Okay, whatever floats your boat."
Thank you for taking good care of my product, because I'm just trying to get ahead here and create some generational wealth. So thank you very much. Oh my gosh, Emil. So you've been at this now 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah, I'm going to call it five.
And so, you know, the overhead, everything that you've got working, how have you funded the business? You know, you're talking about being on the investor wait list. Everybody, the links are in the show notes, and it's going to be very easy to get on the wait list. You'll see in the show notes, or if you're watching the video, it's right up there on the screen. It's an EEEPURL.com/GIL/QEX. And so you'll be able to just go ahead and get on that wait list. What's your goal? What are you hoping to raise, and how are you doing it?
So we are opening up a crowdfund. We've crowdfunded in the past. So we've raised a little over $2 million to date.
Hold on. Big clapping. Hold on. I've got to just have an Andy-licious moment here, everybody. You know that's got to come into the show. Here we go. Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we've crowdfunded. I did the first $300,000 in the family and friends round. Then we did about $1.2 million. We went to Start Engine. We did about $350,000. I did about $500,000 through angel investors to get us to where we're at now. And now we're raising $3 million. We have $300,000 already committed, and we're looking to open up this crowdfund here at the end of this month. And we want to get as many people on the wait list as possible to get in and grab up these shares so that we can continue to keep growing.
Absolutely. Tell everybody how your equity crowdfunding works. What's your minimum investment amount?
So the minimum would be $250 to get in, and you'll be able to buy shares. We don't know what the valuation is this very second, but
you'll have all that worked out.
Yeah.
And the beauty, everybody, of equity crowdfunding is that it's on a platform. Which one will you be using?
So we're going back to WeFunder.
Excellent. So WeFunder already has, and they're the original equity crowdfunding platform, folks. Yeah. And they have all the SEC rules and requirements under their umbrella. So you will get, make sure that you're an Inc. And they will make sure that you have every buttoned up document that you need before you can go live. And that alone is such a great benefit. But the beauty is that friends and family that love you, but they're scraping together and breaking open the piggy bank to get to the 250, they feel it can just be such a wonderful feeling. Warren Buffett always talks about be an owner, right? Be an owner. Well, this is an owner and doing good, and you take the pizza money, you take it all, and you throw your 250 in. And trust me, think about, the goal. I'm sure you have, Emil, would be like to return at least 2 to 10 times their money at the end of the day, right? When you get bought or go public or whatever happens.
Yeah, we go for a good 50x.
Woohoo! 50. So think about that, folks. Okay. It is so, but at the same time, you've added wind to somebody's sales. And look, you finish up a pizza. If you take your family out to dinner, you're dropping $100. I don't care where you're going. And so you take that money, that will just go right through your system, that food, whereas this goes into Boaz Bikes. So I am a huge fan of crowdfunding. I love participating myself. And, remember, folks, all the links are in the show notes to do that and get on the investor wait list, because this is a beautiful product run by a phenomenal founder who clearly has had some great experience along the way that prepared him to be the leader of this company. And the fact that you designed this incredible, incredible bike that really is it's like a scooter, a scoop. I don't know how you combine that, but it is ideal. It is safe. The photo with the basketballs, everybody, I got to tell you, that's really my favorite right here with the basketballs on the front. But look at those four girls on their way off to go do something fun, maybe play a game, whatever. It's wonderful. What does success look like and feel like for you? I mean, you are a believer. You're someone who is spiritually driven for your work in your world, and you're clearly in your joyful purpose. So there's the how you feel, right? How you are serving the world success, but also talk about what, by the numbers, does success look like for you and for Boaz Bikes?
Yeah. So I think for that's a good question. I think for Boaz, success for Boaz would look like that high return for my investors. So I have over 4,000 investors and a lot of first-time investors that, took a shot on me. Mm-hmm. And, if I can help create, generational wealth and to people who've never would have invested, I think that will be, the success for me.
Right.
Reaching that level.
I love that. Because, Emil, so many people use a different measuring stick other than their own, right? And Gary Vee is always saying, I'd rather be happy in my Toyota than crying in my Ferrari, right? And so for you, it's like, I want to give back to the people who trusted me to build this business and return them some significant value financially. That's wonderful. I love that. And then, Boaz, you see it growing. How many cities would you like to see it in over the next year or two?
So right now we have 8 permits. By the end of next year, we expect to be in 30 markets. And come time 2025, if we go IPO, if we're not acquired by then, our goal is 60 cities by the end of 2025.
Holy mackerel. That is a big, hairy, audacious goal, and I'm in it. I'm in it with you to win it. I love it. Everybody hold that vision for Boaz Bikes. That's phenomenal. So, you know, when you go through tough times, Emil, and every founder does, folks, you're not the only one with a big L on your forehead. All right. We all have really tough times. It's a roller coaster ride. One minute you're popping the champagne, the next minute you're crying into it. It's just part of the journey. Emil, what did you use for a mindset hack that really helped you get through those dark days of the soul?
Yeah. I feel like, you know, God blessed me. I was built a little different, you know, where I can take the pressure and I'm willing, able to carry everything on my shoulders. And for me, whenever I'm going through a tough time, I really just think about everybody that I'm doing it for. And that's literally my motivation to wake up every morning to say, hey, you're about to change people's lives forever. And you can't quit, can't give up, you can't get upset, you can't be sad, there's no time to cry. I push myself every single day because I have a lot of people depending on me.
Oh, I love that. And that's what gets you up every day and helps you solve the problems that come your way that you've had to figure out to date and the ones that are around the corner. And so when you're able to hold that why in your heart, you're able to be more of an observer. And I think when we can step out, folks, and be an observer of our business, you're going to understand it for the experiment that it is. You're going to see solutions. Whereas if it's in it and you're looking at it as what does this say about me as a person? You know, what does this say? If you get too personal about it all, you're not going to see the opportunities because you will be stuck on the tyranny of all of that, right? Emil,
you got it right.
Oh my gosh. And you've been an entrepreneur from day one. So, you know, you can look back over this journey of yourself since you were 17. How has it served you? Like, how do you feel that you're a better man, a better human, and how you're serving the world? How has this journey served you both personally, but also professionally?
I most definitely think I'm a better person. And I mean, I've done something that, you know, people, you know, can only dream of. So, I just think it's been wonderful. It made me a better person. I wouldn't change it for the world. I'll take the ups, the downs, and, it's been great. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah. And I think you nailed it on the head when you said that, yeah, you know, you were just built for this too. You know, I'm always telling people you always win no matter what when you launch a business because you're going to get some skills that you can transfer to your next gig if you realize, oh no, this isn't for me, or you're going to get the great skills you're going to transfer to your next business idea. Oh my gosh. Well, let's do a final call to action to everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody, for this incredible conversation with Emil Nani from Boaz Bikes. For those that are in the video, I'm popping those pictures back up. Don't forget to check out just get on the investor wait list, okay? Because when you get on this wait list, when it comes off wait list, you're going to get all the details about Boaz Bikes, the investment, et cetera. You're going to get the numbers. It's very clear and easy, but you don't have to be an accredited investor. That's why we love equity crowdfunding. And for those of you thinking about equity crowdfunding, you heard what this incredible founder went through, Emil, in trying to raise capital traditionally and just was like in shock that other people were getting money, but not him. And we're talking about other people. We're talking mostly white males. And so equity crowdfunding, it's kind of like The Voice, you know, you get to vote without seeing the person singing who's singing. So anyway, Emil, thank you for sharing your phenomenal founder journey stories with us. We've learned so much from you. Any last thoughts before I pop you in the green room and wrap the show up?
No, thank you so much for having me. I am truly blessed. It was great. Thank you. I love you.
I love you too. I'm so excited for you and Boaz Bikes. I can't wait to tell everybody, and I will be like jumping down when you come into Boston with your bikes and telling everybody, we're going to have you visit. We're going to have some kind of an event and a launch in Boston with Boaz Bikes, because I know the community here will go wild for you and what you're doing. Seriously, this is an incredible startup community here. But also, we have 35 educational institutions within, you know, 30 minutes of the city. That's a lot of students who would be very happy with your Boaz bike. So anyway, thanks for joining me. I'm going to pop you in the green room here for a second, wrap up the show. Oh my gosh, everyone. Isn't that inspirational? I just love, love, love Emil's story and where he's going. I want to tell you who's coming on next on the Startup Life Live Show. We're going to be diving into AI with Shanif Danani. He's a ChatGPT consultant with a background in software development and data science. And he's going to talk about how startup businesses can use AI to drive growth and innovation. We're going to get, you know, the skinny on ChatGPT for our industry, the startup industry. And how do you know, whenever I've posted a new show, you join the Startup Life Live meetup group right there. Bit.ly link is on the screen in the show notes, so you can scan that QR code and hop on over there. Until next time, everyone, promise me that you'll always remember you're braver than you believe, stronger than you seem. And as we say here in Boston, you're wicked smarter than you think. You got this. I'm cheering wildly right here with the clappers. And I'm wishing you a delicious day everywhere you glow. Thank you so much for tuning in and carving out time. Say hi to me on social, okay? Mwah. Blowing you kisses. Cheers, everyone.